So Esther, let me know.
Commissioner Koff, this is Randy. Am I in?
You are in, Randy. Can you hear us okay?
Yep, I hear you now. Thanks.
Okay. All right, one more time, Esther. We're good? All right. Well, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun, meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Wednesday, April 9th, approximately 10:30. I appreciate the flexibility for everyone moving the meeting back a half hour. Commissioner Christmas will give us an update where he's at, but he's representing the commission in other parts of the state. I don't have any really opening comments today other than I'm excited that yesterday Mrs. Culkin and I took the maiden voyage on our Harley-Davidson, so the season is now upon us, so and we'll be safe out there. Rancher, do you have anything for us?
Only that to tell you that I am in Fargo right now at the Ag Rail Coalition meeting, and well, I've just left now, and I'm in the vehicle on the way back so that I can be there this afternoon. But it was very interesting. It's continuing to go on, and I'll get some more information from others around the table as we go. But I appreciate everybody's patience with the schedule and moving this back a half hour to leave me at least that extra half hour to be at this meeting as well.
Okay, thank you, Randy. And then you'll be here by the 1:30 meeting we have today?
Correct, yes.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak?
My only comment would be to give a little plug for the 1:30 meeting for any media that might be interested in attending. We're having some folks from the ERC going to be here giving a presentation on the work they're doing on a variety of issues related to enhanced oil recovery in the Bakken, carbon capture and carbon sequestration. So it might be a good succinct overview if you all have a time to attend. Otherwise, I have no other comments. Thank
you. All right, thank you, Julie. We have several items on consent. I would move passage of the consent items.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Is there a discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. We'll move to the regular agenda. I just have a couple notes I wanted to pass out to the listening audience as well as my colleagues. I went back through and had a meeting with our legal team and Daryl, quite honestly, and just kind of reviewed some of our policies on meeting agendas and how we manage the different cases to reinforce some of the things that we do on the commission. And one of the policies that was put back in place in the late 90s was a good policy. It talks about at the request of a commissioner who's not the portfolio holder, you can hold over a case up until the next regular meeting. That's been a longstanding practice of the commission, but we kind of went back through and figured out where exactly that came from. And also reinforced, too, that the portfolio holder can then can choose to not act on a motion, and so they can do that as well. So that might play out today as the meeting progresses. But it's something that was set into policy. I think it's a good idea, and it's just very few times does it the portfolio holder have the ability to move different things around, because quite honestly, most of the time we all three vote on the same things. There's not much discussion back and forth, but there was policies put back into place and different things. And so that's why it is important who has what portfolios at what different times. So on that, I'll get right to item BK1. Item BK1, I move the commission adopt the order reissuing an amending certificate in the application and amendment and transfer of site certificate number 21 from Sequoia Energy USA, Inc. to Border Winds Energy, LLC, case number PU08797 and PU14-31.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. The little background here, in May of 2011, in case number PU08797, the commission adopted a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order issuing certificate of site compatibility number 21 to Sequoia Energy USA, authorizing construction of a 150-megawatt Border Winds Energy project in Rolette, North Dakota. I was actually on those hearings, and it took a while, actually, to get that worked out. We had the hearings up there. There were some airfield issues that we worked through, but we had issued that certificate at that time to Sequoia Energy. They'd never acted on it to actually build anything. Kind of fast-forwarding a little bit to January of this year, Sequoia and Border Winds Energy filed a joint application to transfer site certificate number 21 to Border Winds Energy. Border Winds Energy would purchase a project from Sequoia, develop it, and then transfer ownership under a purchase and sales agreement with NSP doing business as Xcel Energy. And for those that followed the XL rate case, we were heavily involved in that discussion with XL. It's interesting. We have the siting ability, but then authority. Then you also have the ability to go through with the different companies, and that was an item that we dealt with quite a bit, quite honestly, in the rate case. We got that worked out, and XL has the ability to do what was just put into motion. So you can see how this is going to actually, to me, it looks like this is going to actually be built this time. Also on January 8th, Borderwinds filed a petition to amend the May 5th findings of fact conclusion law to authorize changes in the previously approved site number 21 turbine site plan. In February, the commission issued a notice of intent to amend, notice of opportunity for hearing, and notice of informal hearing that provided until March 28th of this year for comments or hearing requests. And if not, we could have a decide this in informal, which we had on March 25th of 2014. We received no request for an official hearing. We had on March 25th a discussion with the company and the application to walk basically through it. Border Winds Energy is a wholly owned subsidiary of Renewable Energy Systems America, RES America, which has developed over 5,000 megawatts of wind around the company. So this is now a major wind player that has stepped up here to take some ownership in this. The biggest change that I saw during the informal was that the original siting certificate had 66 2.3 megawatt turbines, up to 66. In this case, the transfer would then authorize up to 75 turbines with a smaller size, a 2.0 megawatts. So during the informal, a lot of the questions that we had were based upon the changes in where the turbines might be located, how that might affect homeowners, how that might affect noise. And really, the way it turned out is everything is in the original footprint. The company did all the noise requirements, shadow flicker requirements. Everything was in what I would consider the quote-unquote normal range. We heard back from the State Historical Society determining no significant sites were affected, so everything certainly seems to be in order to transfer this certificate. I would note that the approximate cost now is $260 million, which is interesting. When Sequoia Winds gave us their approximate cost, it was $360 million. So I talked to our staff guru, Mr. Lean, and asked him basically, you know, why do you think the cost drops so much? I know there's some turbine differences, but Jerry and I walked through that in the industry, the cost of wind turbines is dropping dramatically. And so the ability to now buy these turbines at a much lower cost is actually helping out some of the wind energy development. So that's a significant decrease in approximate cost. So I look forward to the voting on this order today, and hopefully they can get this all built and move forward on it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Okay, item BK2. We have a request from my colleague to hold this over, so we're going to hold this over underneath the commission policy until our next scheduled meeting. Item BK3. I move the commission deem the application complete and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in the application of Sunflower Wind Project, LLC, for a certificate of site compatibility to construct a proposed 110-megawatt Sunflower Wind Energy Project in Stark and Morton counties of North Dakota, case number PU14-105.
Second.
In March of this year, Sunflower Wind Project, LLC, filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a 110-megawatt Sunflower Wind Energy Project consisting of up to 59 wind turbine generators and associated facilities in Stark and Morton counties, as shown on the attached map, and I'll kind of walk through where it's proposed to be located at. A public hearing is scheduled for May 12, 2014, 10 a.m. Central Daylight Time at the Hebron Community Center, 620 Washington Avenue, Hebron, North Dakota. And to walk through a little tighter location, if you could visualize straight south of Hebron, west of Glen Ullin, and east of Ridgeton, that spot right in there is where this proposed wind farm would be located at. It's approximately 12,000 acres, all of which is on private land, and the approximate cost at this time is $180 million. So I look forward to reviewing the record and getting out to the hearing if everything looks to be in order at this point.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just add on this project that the location being west of the river, and another 110 megawatts of generation. While it isn't base load, and what we really need out west is base load, this will help serve some of the need for power out west, and I believe that some of our co-ops are looking at a power purchase agreement with them, this project, to purchase the power. It's a little too early to say if that's going to happen or not, but I know those discussions are occurring, and I think this would provide another generation resource to fuel the growing need for power out west.
I think, Ms. Chairman, if I could also add something to that, just for anyone who might be listening, one little difference here in this one, I think, compared to say perhaps the Bison wind farms that are kind of near this out there north of New Salem, those are seem to be set back farther from the interstate. And while they're visible from the interstate and the high traffic volume, they're sort of off in the distance. I think this one is going to be much more visible to people, to a large number of people who are driving. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether that affects people's opinion of this wind farm compared to the Bison wind farm.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
Is there any other further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. And finally for me, item BK4. I move the commission deem the application complete and issue a notice of filing, a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Elite, Inc. for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, a corridor certificate, and a route permit authorizing the reroute of 0.7 miles of 250 kV DC electric transmission line in Cass County, North Dakota, case number PU14-121.
Second.
In March of this year, Minnesota Power and Operating Division of Elite filed an application for a corridor certificate route permit and a waiver of procedures and time schedules authorizing the reroute of approximately 0.7 miles of existing 250 kV DC line to reroute around a flood control basin in Township 137 North, Range 54 West, Section 11 in Cass County, basically the southwest portion of Cass County. So basically we have set up the comments and requests for hearing must be received by May of this year, and if no hearing is requested, we can deal with this in informal. In my opinion, this one, it looks like the company has been forward-thinking, trying to avoid some problems down the road with flood control, so I look forward to moving forward on this when the opportunity comes.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Aye. Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. All right, that concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Crispin, are you going to read through the motions from your end?
I will.
Okay.
I have just pulled over.
All right, I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that caveat.
On the drive, but starting with RC1, I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 12 to surface coal mining permit number BNCR-9401 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Center Mine to add 181.54 acres to the permit and to update the appropriate sections of the permit for mining-related activities on the additional acreage.
Second.
On May 4th, of 2012, BNI Coal Limited submitted the application for revision number 12 to add 181.54 acres, as I mentioned, to this permit area at the Center Mine. With the approval, the total acreage in this permit area will increase to 384.17 acres. With 181.5 acres added to permit number 9401 with revision number 12, the permit will also support mining operations in pending permit number BNCR-1101. And these two permit numbers are important to keep separate because the permit application 1101 encompasses over 8,300 acres south of the Young Station with approval expected later this spring and mining commencing in 2015. Permit 1101 will be the source of much of the Center Mine's coal production over the next 30 years. Getting back to this, revision number 12 was deemed a significant revision and was subject to public notice requirements. BNI Coal published the required notices in the Center Republican and the Bismarck Tribune, and the Commission sent notices to all surface owners that will be affected, as well as numerous local, state, and federal agencies. In addition, advisory committee members were provided copies of the application for their review and comment. There were no objections or requests for an informal conference on this revision app, and no major issues were raised during the review of the revision. A bond amount of just over $1 million is sufficient at this time to cover the required reclamation, restoration, and abatement work in bond area 9401. BNI has filed a stipulation to increase surety bond number 400JR3522 to that precise amount. The actual amount is $1,017,422 for this permit, and increase the bond area by the 181.5 acres. The stipulation has been reviewed and found to be properly executed. Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision and respectfully recommends that it be conditionally approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the Commission approve revision number 16. That's 1-6. To surface coal mining permit number NACT-0201 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to identify the next five-year coal removal areas and update mining and reclamation plans and other sections of the permit for the next permit term.
Second.
On December 11th of last year, the Coteau Properties Company filed this application for this revision to their mining permit. The revision identifies the next five-year coal removal areas and addresses items that were identified as requiring updating or modification by the Reclamation Division during a pre-renewal review of the permit. This revision includes updates of legal ownership, right-of-way, and business entity and compliance information, surface water management plans, revegetation establishment and management procedures, and post-mining land use plans. This revision was considered a significant revision application and was subject to the public notice requirement. Coteau has submitted affidavits to publication of the newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no comments or objections to this revision application. Adequate performance bond is currently in effect for the mine-wide consolidated bonding plan, which was updated last fall. This and other permits at the Freedom Mine are covered by self and collateral bonds, totaling, get this, $119 million. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision application and respectfully recommends it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you. And moving on to RC3, I move the Commission approve renewal number 2 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-0201 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine again to extend the permit term on the existing permit area for another 5 years until April 14th. 2019.
Second.
This also on December 11th of last year, the Coteau Properties filed the application for renewal number 2 to their permit to continue to conduct mining operations within the existing permit area until 2019. This permit area covers approximately 17,000 acres. The reclamation, the Coteau has applied for this five-year renewal because coal removal operations will continue for many years in this permit area. mining and reclamation plans and other information were updated for the next permit term as part of revision number 16 that was submitted with the renewal application. Coteau has submitted the affidavits of publication of the newspaper articles, just like in the other one. We notified appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. Again, we received no comments or objections on this renewal application. Evidence of adequate performance bond and liability insurance are currently on file. The mine-wide consolidation bonding plan was updated, and their self and collateral bonds total $119 million. And just to point out, of the 17,000 acres, about $7,000 an acre, which I just point that out for your information. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this five-year permit renewal and respectfully recommends that it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just wanted to add just a quick thought. We got a great staff in the PSC, but I want to thank Jim and his crew because these type of applications, renewals, they're very, very detailed and a lot of different moving parts, and you guys do a great job putting it together, so thank you.
I also wanted to just add a comment sort of on all three of these coal-related permits that we're hopefully voting to extend and provide permit for coal mining in North Dakota for the next 5 years and beyond. Yesterday, we all met separately with Priti Patel, who, aside from having a really interesting name, has an interesting job. She works for the MISO, ISO, Independent System Operator, which operates transmission throughout our region. And she talked about the winter events, electricity events in our region and throughout the country as brought about by the harsh winter. And it was very interesting because she told me that they exceeded our historic peak on January 6th, which is usually not when we reach our peak. It's usually in the summer. So on January 6th, in the Midwest region and throughout the country, I think, we exceeded our peak demand for power. And so on that day, they called all of their generators throughout the region and said, tomorrow you need to be at maximum output. So turn your generators on as high as they can and keep them there. That's what they estimated they needed to meet the demand for power during that time. And everyone complied and did this. But during that time, a large number of coal generators were called upon to be at their peak. And it really underscored for me the importance of having coal-fired generation. We would have been in trouble if some of those generators had been retired and not available for use at that time. Coal provides a very important baseload resource, especially in winter months. It is something that you can stockpile. You can have months of supply on hand. You don't have to worry about a pipeline breaking and losing your gas supply. And so in terms of reliability in winter months, coal is tough to beat. And I think that as we're looking to approve these coal permits and support the coal mining industry in North Dakota for another length of time, I think it's important to recognize why we're doing that and how important that coal resource is to consumers, especially in the middle of the winter. So I'm pleased to support these efforts in North Dakota.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Commissioner Crispin, okay, I had the note from you that for RC4, which is your motion, you'd like to not act on that today because you want some additional time. Is that still correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and then before I forget, Randy, do you want us to want to authorize Esther to sign or just sign when you get back this afternoon?
I'll be back in a few hours, so I'll just sign this stuff when I get back.
Okay, anything else for your portfolio, Commissioner?
Nope, that concludes my portfolio, but
right.
I'll be hanging on the line for Commissioner Fedorchik's portfolio.
And I remember your comment about where the money goes for if you get caught speeding, even though it is for the kids. I would hope you drive the speed limit today.
Okay. No, I won't respond to that.
All right, Commissioner Fedorchik.
All right. Let's see here. Actually, Brian, can I borrow your motion? Because mine was on a previous version, and I used it.
Mine might be different than yours.
I don't think so. I think I'm just missing the cover sheet. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order on rate design in Montana Dakota Utility Companies, a division of MDU Resources Natural Gas Service rate increase application case number PU-13-803.
I will second it for purpose of the second.
I seconded it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
As background here, last September, MDU filed a request for a rate increase. Their original request was for a 6.4% increase and $6.8 million of increased revenue. On October 23rd, MDU and advocacy staff filed a settlement agreement that resolved the expense, revenue, and return issues in this proceeding. The settlement agreement provided for an increase in test year revenue of $4.25 million, or approximately 4% increase in revenues. The settlement agreement did not address or resolve all the rate design issues. In November, the commission approved interim rates that would collect $4.25 million and approved that in November. On December, we had public input sessions on the settlement agreement and the outstanding rate design hearings. We held those over interactive video in Bismarck, Dickinson, Williston, Jamestown, Minot, and Devil's Lake. On December 30th, the commission adopted the settlement agreement, which again settled the expense, revenue, and return issues and provided $4.25 million in increased revenues to the company for an approximate increase of 4%. The remaining issue is after that was on rate design. On December 30th, we issued a notice of hearing and scheduled a public hearing on February 5th regarding the rate design issue, a public formal hearing regarding that rate design issue. And the issues to be discussed at that were what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on MDU's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota, and are MDU's proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they would result in a basis of charge to customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination. We held that hearing on February 5th and received testimony from MDU, from advocacy staff, and from the Association of American Retired Persons, AARP. So here we are today. We have before us an order that will do a number of things. In our hearing, we heard from advocacy staff that there is four goals in rate design: that rates should be based on or move towards cost, should provide increases or decreases that are distributed equitably, that administering the changes should be practical, and rate shock should be avoided. Staff proposed some changes to what MDU had proposed in terms of how the different rate increases are allocated in a formula that more equally distributes them across rate and customer classes. Our order today, the order before us, adopts those recommendations. Okay. So I just want to kind of back up a little bit and talk about how some of the key pieces of this. There's two parts of a customer bill. Basically, there's a customer charge. It's a distribution charge that recovers revenues from the company for the company to pay for all the distribution investment that they have to get the gas service out to customers. That's the one part of the bill. The second part of the bill is a volumetric charge that charges customers based on what they use. It's a straight fee based on the cost of gas. So there's those two parts of the bill. This rate case just deals with the first part, which is how does the company recover revenue to pay for its infrastructure to deliver service to customers. The company proposed combining two separate charges. So within that customer charge, there's two separate charges currently. There's a base customer charge, which is currently $9, and then there's a volumetric charge that is based on how much gas a customer uses, and it's like 0.393 cents per decatherm or something to that effect. What the company proposed in this rate design was to go to a strict flat fee. So they wanted to increase the flat fee to approximately $18 per customer and get a rate, do away with the volumetric charge for the collecting their distribution revenues. And they outlined some rationale for doing that. First of all, it doesn't cost any more, regardless of how much you use, the cost to serve you is the same. So the cost to serve Brian, if he's hooked up to a gas just for his gas grill, is the same as it is to serve me if I'm using it to heat my home. The company's cost to provide the service to the home is the same. So the theory behind charging a flat fee is that you're charging everybody the same because the costs are the same. This is something that was approved in the Xcel rate case of a number of years ago, and it's called decoupling, where you decouple the company's revenues from its profits. So you decouple the cost from the volumetric charge. So the AARP argued that moving entirely to the flat fee was too big of a jump. They didn't like that idea of going entirely to the flat fee and advocated for something less of that. So what our order today does is moves this flat fee, rather than going to the full $18, the order today would move the flat fee to $17.51. Would move the flat fee to $15. And so the remaining difference in the $17.51, which is what the ultimate total cost will be for the customer, is going to be charged in a volumetric charge. I think this is a reasonable approach. It addresses the concerns the AARP had with not going the entire way in one time, while it also moves towards a method of charging customers that is both, I believe, fair and doesn't penalize customers who can't afford to weatherize their home and invest in all the expensive, most modern technologies to have an efficient home, so that their volumetric charge would be higher in their distribution fee. And also makes people who are using very little gas for just a few purposes pay the cost that it costs to get the gas service out to their home. This will also reduce customer bills in the winter when they are the highest, also minimizing the impact for, you know, customers on fixed incomes. And it also preserves the customer's incentive to conserve, because 65% of the customer's total bill comes in the cost of the gas they use, and this rate design doesn't impact that at all. So they still have a vast majority of their incentive to conserve in that portion of the bill. So for that reason, I move that we support the order before us that would basically move a basic service charge for residential customers to 0.493 cents per day or $15 per month, and would have the remaining increase in revenues collected through the distribution delivery charge to residential customers on a per decatherm basis of approximately 0.327 cents per decatherm. And the other key pieces of this, the MDU also proposed to increase the basic service charge for the other customer classes. This order also goes along with that request and modifies it a bit based on staff and suggestions. And I believe that's a positive as well, because it allows us to move rates towards cost while mitigating the impact of the rate change for the some of the business customers as well. So that summarizes the key pieces of this order. There's more background information on the drivers of the rate case, et cetera, that we could go into if people have questions on that. But I did also want to mention, in the hearing, MDU provided a list of some of the other customer service charges that other utilities use. This is a very common way of charging customers. You see it on phone bills. You see it in your electric bills as well. There's typically a base customer service charge that every customer pays for getting service. And, for instance, some of the comparable, not gas, but electric rates, the customer service charge for Capital Electric customers in Bismarck, for example, is $16.50. The rural Capital Electric customers pay $19. Rough Rider Electric out west a bit pays $20 monthly customer service charge, and it goes on up to that. This MDU charge would be in the kind of middle range of the similar customer service charges in that customers are paying in North Dakota.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I'll just put out my position on this hasn't changed since the work session, so I don't support the motion the way it is. And just for just one basic reason, when we had the hearing, the individuals came and from the retired folks and young families, and their testimony was they didn't want to move it all the way up. And when I pushed the testimony back and forth, I said, what would you agree with? And they said, well, move it up half. So half would be 1360, not 15. And that's where I'm at. So I'm not going to move off of that. And I think it's important when people take time to come and testify in front of us with good rationale that if we can meet their desires, we do so. And so that's where I'll stick at. I'll be voting against this one. And the companies that we regulate, MDU Electric, the basic charge is $10.65, Otter Tail Electric, $8, and XL Electric, $14. So I think the $13.60 would tie up a nice tight record that we've got record from the people that took time to come out that they support the $13.60. It's in the range of what we normally would do. And for gas, yes, it is true that the XL is $18. That was a rate case back in 2007. And so I think it is right to keep moving things towards that decoupling. But I think you take it in incremental steps, and that's why I don't support the $15 today.
I do think it's important to note, Commissioner Kalk is right, that is where they AARP came in. The total cost that customers will pay is really the same under either version. It's just a matter of where it comes from, whether you pay it a lower customer service charge and a higher amount of your portion of your bill is a volumetric charge, or if a slightly higher flat rate and less on a volumetric charge. So I think it's really important to emphasize that either way, what the total average customer's increase is going to be the same. It's just a difference between how it's collected and kind of a philosophical change there. But customers don't save money one way or another. The whole point of the rate design is to find a way to get the company the money that we've approved them to have. So one way or another doesn't result in lower costs to customers.
I think that's our point of disagreement. The point is, I think that if you the lower the fixed charge, if you do actually use less gas, you'll pay less. So that's just a philosophical difference, and that's where we're at.
When you might pay 50 cents difference, but you're where you really save money in spending in reducing your gas cost is on the 65% of your bill that is related to the price of the gas and how much gas you consume. And that remains unaffected by by this entire rate case. That was never a part of it. So we're just talking about literally you can see in the difference between, you know, what a customer in January would pay under the $15 basic fee versus AARP under the $15 basic fee, they'd pay $20.52, and under the basic $13.60 AARP suggestion was they would pay $22. So, and that's in a high use month, so it's $1.50 difference. And in the summer, they'd pay slightly more in under the volumetric charge. So. Anyway,
Mr. Chairman, this is Rand, if I can just weigh in for a second, I just want to say that you made a really good point on the testimony of AARP, and that they took the time to weigh in and came in with a thoughtful approach that you know, it clearly indicated that they had done some research, given it thought, and that it's important that that be considered. And I really do think that if we were setting this now at the $13.50 they had suggested, or at the $15 that's in the motion for the base rate, I think clearly their testimony was considered, was recognized, and deemed important. And because they were right, you cannot have too much rate shock and move this too far too fast. And so they're definitely right about that. And in either case, I think they're going to have had a significant impact on this, that it will not be all of what the company asked for. The question is whether it'll be $13.50 or $15. In either event, they've had a significant impact. The only question is how far they move the ball.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, I will proceed with a roll call vote. Commissioner Kalk.
Nay.
Commissioner Christman.
Aye.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Okay, anything else, Commissioner Fedorchak?
That's it.
Okay, perfect. Randy, do you have anything else out there from Traveling Land?
I do not. Is there going to be a break before admin, or are we moving right into that, or what?
We'll probably answer questions from the media, and then we'll go into admin, if that's okay with Julie. Is that okay with you?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so do you have any closing comments before we?
I don't.
All right, we'd be happy to try to answer any questions we can from our colleagues in the media.
What's the commercial rate increase?
Hold on. Well, there's a number of different classes of commercial. There's four or so different. But the small interruptibles is $175. Small transportation will be $175. Large interruptible sales and large interruptible transportation will be $1,000 base rate. And I don't know what the total increase is for them, but I'm sure the MDU folks can give you what it used to be and how it will be in the future.
Didn't we decide?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, can you repeat the question? Because I can't hear that.
This is mine.
What was the commercial rate increase?
Okay, thank you.
I just read your motion. I didn't understand. Tammy, can you get him that after the meeting? The specifics increase.
What's that, Tammy? Go ahead.
The $13.50. What?
$13.60.
$13.60. That's the halfway point between what? Which two numbers?
Oh, yeah, great question. The current charge is $9.07 a month, and so the proposed cost of the company was $18. And so when you run those numbers, when I talked to the witness. I said, okay, what would you agree to? And the agreement that the witness tendered back was we would agree to, on behalf of our organization, half of that. And so that's why I came down with that number.
Oh, someone from AARP?
We did. They're individual. I think Mr. Asfig was out here. So that's where that number came from me, from the testimony to the witness that's on the record of the hearing.
A lot of arithmetic flying around here. I'm lost. I'm reading the cheat sheet. The average residential customer will pay $7.51 a month.
$17.51.
Excuse me, $17.51. I'll throw my cheaters down here. An average increase of $2.17.
Correct.
So I'm paying $15.34 now?
Average.
Average, yes.
The average customer is paying $9.07 now, the residential customer.
Well, help total. Me reconcile those numbers.
See, this is the $17.51 is the total bill. That would be both your basic, again, this is the distribution charge for your portion of your bill. There's two charges, distribution and then the cost of gas. On the distribution charge, it's broken down into two ways, a flat customer fee, which is $9 today, and a volumetric charge. Total, those two combined, the average customer will pay under this rate increase $17.51. That is a $2.17 per month increase over the total that they're paying now.
That's what I was asking.
Okay.
That's exactly what I was asking.
Total.
Uh-huh.
Either way, whether it was whether the charge would be whether the basic charge would be $13.60 per month plus a volumetric charge or $15 per month plus a volumetric charge, that's the average that a customer will pay.
Average $15.34 a month now.
I'm assuming that's correct, but I can't, James, I haven't
just
taken that. Yep.
That's Jesuit education.
Yep.
It may be wrong.
I would believe that was right because these are the numbers that we got for total increase. So,
can we didn't hear who the commissioner was who asked that basin electric line be tabled? Was that Randy?
Commissioner Fedorchuk asked
me.
That we it's not tabled. That was part of the make sure we use the right phraseology. According to our policy, a commissioner can hold something over.
Okay.
So the request was made this morning to hold it over. So that's why I put out the policies that we don't want to get into the Roberts Rules of Order because that requires votes. But the commission policy says any commissioner can hold over any item for one meeting. And I would assume it's not the portfolio holder because the portfolio holder would not bring it for a vote if they weren't ready to vote on it. In case we're Randy today, we had something on the schedule that as the portfolio holder, he looked at it and wanted some more information, so he just chose not to act on it.
So, Commissioner Fedorchuk, why did you want to hold that over?
I'm still deliberating and reviewing information, and I'm not ready to vote.
And that will come up next meeting?
The next scheduled meeting. Okay. One thing we haven't clarified yet between myself and Alana is if we could have a special meeting at 4 o'clock today, but I think the intent for me was that we'll have a vote the next scheduled meeting. And I had the order is available. It's public record. Now there's a draft if you wanted to look at it, but that's my draft, not anyone else's. So. Okay. Dave, anything today? Nick? Okay. All right, let's go ahead and we'll close the regular scheduled meeting.